The storm system is expected to push through most of the area. But most of the Midwest can expect a dry Thursday night. Unsettled weather will continue Friday as the frontal system in the south starts to push north and stalls over the Midwest. Highs today will range from the low 70s over southern Wisconsin to the upper 80s in southern Missouri and western Kentucky. Lows overnight will be in the mid-50s across central Wisconsin to the low 70s in southern Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high 77, the wind out of the southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms are likely. Locally heavy rainfall is possible. Look for a low of 63. The wind will be from the east at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms are likely, the high 75 with a south wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a low of 63, and the wind from the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, partly sunny with a high around 80. The wind from the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday night and Friday, mostly cloudy. The low Thursday night in the low 60s and the high Friday around 80. Friday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low in the mid-60s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the mid-60s to the mid-70s. At Rockford, it was 76, O'Hare 71, Bloomington 69, Mattoon 65, Carbondale 67. At South Bend, 72, Lafayette and Terre Haute 70, Indianapolis reported 75 degrees. And at noon central time, Willard Airport reported a cloudy sky, 69 degrees. The dew point, 57. The relative humidity, 65%. The wind out of the southeast at 18 with gusts to 24. The barometric pressure, 29.98 and falling. And at 12:39, 70 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Traveling along Route 150, you've got to obey the rules of the road. But at one popular hangout in Farmer City, those same rules don't apply. Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers took a trip there for the wild and fast world of dirt late model racing as part of our series, Life on Route 150.
Welcome to Wake County Fairgrounds Farmer City Raceway.
More than 200 drivers are getting ready for a high-speed pursuit around a quarter-of-a-mile dirt oval. The competition hasn't actually started yet, but your senses are already racing with the smell of greasy concession food and the stern looks of those die-hard fans. Several race car drivers line up on the side of the track, posing next to their vehicles and signing autographs. Hope Wasson traveled about an hour and a half for the race from Taylorville.
Go say hi to him. Come on, let's go say hi to Jeff.
Her four-year-old daughter, Sonia, gives nine-time Farmer City track champion, Jeff Lika, a big hug.
Is that a winning hug?
I hope. You're a pretty little girl.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
She knows when the weekend gets here, it's always, Mama, Papa, we're going racing, right?
The drivers do several hot laps around the track to check the gears and get the cars warmed up. With dirt flying through the air, you can't even really hear yourself think, but that doesn't seem to bother 66-year-old Fran Dick, who raced on this track back in the 1970s.
A lot of people don't like dirt. They like asphalt, but you got to be a man to race on dirt.
The racetrack has a long history in Farmer City. It's been on Route 150 since 1938. Midget auto races were the featured attraction until stock cars took over in the early 1950s. Sports reporter Rex Marskamp has been covering the racing industry for 30 years. When I asked Rex to talk about some memorable moments in his years covering Farmer City, the first name out of his mouth is
Bob Pierce. He raced there for years and he had some wild finishes and races.
Bob Pierce set five separate records here during the 1980s. He now builds race cars for a living. Last year, he set his sights on reshaping the Vermilion County Fairgrounds Speedway by being its promoter.
We had cars with no people, and it was terrible. I mean, it was really terrible. No people, no fans whatsoever.
The Danville Raceway is sitting empty right now, unable to secure a promoter willing to put money into races that attract a large crowd. The same thing happened to the Farmer City Raceway, which closed last July but reopened in April with new promoters. With Danville's racetrack behind him, Bob Pierce is training his 14-year-old son, Bobby. Even though Bobby Pierce is not old enough for a driver's license, some racetracks, like Farmer City, will accept younger race car drivers as long as their parents sign a waiver of liability. But that hasn't always been the case. The Farmer City Fair Association's Raceway Committee Chair says years ago, NASCAR champion Jeff Gordon was turned away from competing at Farmer City because of his age. But tonight, Bobby Pierce is behind the steering wheel. Bobby drives his car back to the pit stop after finishing a few laps. His father is waiting for him.
You went a little bit lower than I expected you to. You got a little tail hung out there and you waited on the car quite a bit, so...
Bob Pierce slides underneath Bobby's car to fix it up before the next race. Nearby, Bobby studies his racing scores.
Your dad is, I just noticed he gives you a lot of advice.
Yeah, it's a little hard, but he kind of gets it into my head that that's what I need to do, and I try to do it.
Here we go, 12 laps of distance, top three to the A-Main, final semi-feature. We're underway.
A little bit later, Bobby competes in the Consy race. Up against 11 other drivers, he has to place in the top three to advance to the main feature. He starts off second from the lead, then falls back to third, and ends the race coming in fourth.
Final time, race fans, your winner out of Springfield, give it a Brian Dively.
After the Consy race, I find Bobby alone in his family's camper. He says this isn't a time to celebrate.
The car seemed like it was lacking a little bit of traction coming off. I mean, things didn't fall into place, I guess.
It's in Bobby's blood to race, and in that vein, he's keeping the Farmer City Raceway's heritage alive by defining what it means to be a winner, even after the dirt on the track settles. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
For an audio slideshow of the Farmer City Raceway and to see some of the classic cars that have raced at the track, visit our community engagement website at willconnect.org. It's 12:45. Billions of periodical cicadas have emerged over the past few weeks in more than a dozen states across the Southeast and Midwest. Yesterday, St. Louis Public Radio's Veronique LaCapra took us out in the field to explore their unusual behavior. Now she's headed into the kitchen.
The emergence of the great southern brood of 13-year periodical cicadas has created a food bonanza for predators. Entomologist Chris Hartley of the Butterfly House in Chesterfield says cicadas don't have any toxins and they can't bite or sting. Their only defense is in their numbers.
Their strategy for surviving is to give the predators so much potential food that they can never finish them all off.
And so that's why they emerge all at once.
That's why they emerge all at once.
Hartley says cicadas make a tasty meal for everything from birds to ants to lizards. Dogs love them, and Hartley tells me, so do some people. To test out that theory, we head inside to a Butterfly House classroom to cook some up.
Cicadas, just like all insects, are very close relatives of crustaceans. So there is essentially no difference between these guys and shrimp or crabs or anything like that.
Hartley goes into another room for a minute and comes back with a little white ceramic bowl. In it are a couple dozen orangey-white blobs with bulging black eyes. Cicadas he's been storing in a freezer.
Are these adults?
These are the newly emerged adults, the ones that are still white. And they were caught before they had a chance to really harden up. So they're a lot like soft-shell crabs. They're still very soft.
Hartley turns on a hot plate and puts in some vegetable oil and about half a stick of butter.
All right. I have 5 cloves of garlic in here that we're going to throw in to give it a nice flavor.
So now you've obviously done this before.
Well, I've done many different kind of entomophagy classes over the years.
What was that word?
Entomophagy. That means insect eating. In Greek. But really, the cicadas and other insects can be treated in just about any way you would treat shrimp.
Hartley says you can deep fry them, bake them, cook them with soy sauce in a stir fry, or saute them. He adds the garlic to the pan to brown.
And again, we eat shrimp, crayfish, lobster, crab, whereas, you know, for people in other parts of the world, including Africa and Australia, South America, North America, and throughout Asia, eating insects has always been part of it. It's what you do.
Out comes the garlic, and in go the cicadas.
All right, in they go.
The reason they're popping like that is that we're using the whole body here, and actually, amazingly enough, the things like the wings, which are just thin little sheets of exoskeleton, tend to swell up like balloons when they're exposed to heat like that, and then you get the popping.
Hartley dices up the garlic and adds it back to the pan of sautéing cicadas.
And now our cicadas are definitely starting to crisp up, as I can tell as I poke them around there. That's good.
A few more minutes, and the cicadas complete their transformation from soft and squishy to brown and crunchy. Hartley transfers his culinary concoction to a plate, tops it off with a little fresh parsley and lemon juice, and voila, cicada scampi. If I ignore all the little beady black eyes staring back up at me, it actually looks, well, pretty tasty. Still, I make Hartley take the first bite.
Hmm. Nice, crisp, nice flavor of butter and garlic. They're wonderful.
All right, I'll try one. Here we go, eating a cicada. It's actually really good.
Those crunchy, shrimp-like cicadas will probably die off in the St. Louis area in the next couple weeks. Hartley hopes that in the meantime, people will at least try to enjoy them, on the dinner plate or otherwise. I'm Veronique LaCapra.
For a snapshot of life in East Central Illinois, take an audio trip along Route 150. We'll supply the vehicle.
Just keep your faith and keep going is all you can do.
The people along 150 face the same issues, concerns, and joys of life we all face.
This is home. This is home. This is home. Yeah.
Listen all this month for stories from our trip, from rail trails and dirt tracks to churches, stores, and farms. Life on Route 150 on Morning Edition from Illinois Public Media.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 14th of June, 2011. It's Flag Day, 1777. On this day, the Second Continental Congress approved the Stars and Stripes as the flag of the United States. It's the 200th birthday of Harriet Beecher Stowe, born Litchfield, Connecticut, 1811, daughter of a prominent minister, Lyman Beecher, a great abolitionist. She married, moved to Cincinnati, which was just across the Ohio River from a slave-holding state, Kentucky. And Harriet Beecher Stowe encountered fugitive slaves, and from her experience, she wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, 1852, a national sensation. The novelist Jane Smiley wrote an essay in 1996 in Harper's.